is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, October 10th, 2023. And today will be better than yesterday. Yesterday was really great. I'm Buster Olney, working from my hotel in Bristol, Connecticut. I'm in Bristol doing Baseball Tonight on ESPN every single day. We've got Taylor Schwenk. We have Sarah Abbott with us. How much fun was that game last night, Taylor?
Oh, my God. Best game so far of the postseason. People are saying, oh, it's been kind of boring. But, I mean, I think it's good, been good, and that just really took things up a level. That's been everything you wanted, Buster.
Yeah. Sarah, I was going to ask you about your Phillies losing that game, but I'm going to ask you more about, have you noticed Taylor with the Orioles down 2-0 today? He's got a whole rally cap thing going on.
He does. His hat is currently, for those who, I mean, we are on an audio podcast, so you can't see, the bill of his hat is flipped up, which I believe is covering the Orioles logo. Is that what's happening, Taylor?
It's inside out, too. So inside out,
man,
upside down, backwards. Shout out to Wendy. She taught me that back in the day at Camden Yards.
Yeah, last night was so exciting. So much drama, which was awesome. Very sad that, you know, it didn't go in our favor and momentum has shifted a bit, but we'll bounce back, you know?
I thought your Phillies were in a great position last night. They took an early lead. Top of the first inning, Alec Bohm gave the Phillies the 1-0 lead.
First one to Bohm. Swing and a line drive. Base hit out of the left center field. Turner had to hold up. They're still going to send him. He's around third. He's on his way to the plate. In to score Trey Turner. Alec Bohm, a first pitch RBI single. And the Phillies have jumped in front. It is 1-0.
Now, he was in support of Zach Wheeler, who was absolutely dominant. This is what it sounded like in the bottom of the second inning as Wheeler struck out the side.
And the 1-2. Strike three on the outside corner, and Ben May rings up Ozuna. Here's 0-2. Swing and a miss, struck him out, and Wheeler gets Darnold. That is five strikeouts for Zach Wheeler, and there's two away. 2-2. Swing and a miss, struck him out. How about Zach Wheeler? He's gotten all six outs via the strikeout.
The Phillies increase their lead from 1-0 to 3-0 in the top of the third inning.
The 2-0. Swing and a high fly ball drilled out towards right center field. That one's back on its way and it's gone. Home run, JT Realmuto into the bullpen in right center field. Realmuto will touch them all and the Phillies now lead it 3-0.
Yeah, Max Fried was just not right last night. He hadn't pitched in 18 days. He didn't really have very good command. That sound, by the way, Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio. We talked about the Phillies being more aggressive on the bases. That happened with Nick Castellanos in the top of the fifth.
One out, man at first. Yates delivers. There goes the runner. The pitch is low. Throw to second is too high. Over the head of Arcia into center field. Castellanos gets up, and he'll make it to third without a throw. So it's a stolen base and an E2.
So the Phillies extend their lead to 4-0. This is what it sounded like, bottom of the fifth inning. Zach Wheeler, no hitter in progress.
2-1 down. Wheeler fires. Swing and a ground ball to the right side. Stott charges in it to his right. Throws to first. They get Rosario. And the Braves have now gone 14 innings without scoring. That is the longest stretch of the season.
As the bottom of the sixth began, the win probability for the Phillies, 94%. But Ozzie Albies broke up the no-hitter.
The pitch. Swing and a line drive and a base hit. That's into right field. Castellanos up with it. Throw to second. Acuna will stop at third. Throw gets away from Turner. Acuna scrambling in and he'll score.
In the bottom of the seventh inning, Travis d'Arnaud, an underrated postseason performer, went deep to cut it to 4-3.
Here's d'Arnaud now, the pitch. Swing and a high drive left field. That one back. That one's gone. Home run, Travis d'Arnaud over the 375 marker. And just like that, the Braves are within one.
Here was the call in the bottom of the eighth inning when Austin Riley gave the Braves the lead.
Everybody on their feet at Truist Park. Acuna, third, two down, 3-2. 4-3 Phillies, bottom eight. The pitch to Riley. Swing and a high fly ball, left field. That one back towards the wall. That one is gone. Austin Riley. It's a two-run homer, and the Braves have the lead. Here's the pitch. swing and a high fly ball drilled out towards center field. That one back, back some more. Harris at the wall, and he makes the catch. Racing back to first is Harper as the throw comes in, cut off, throw to first, double play. Oh, my goodness. Harris's throw got away from Albies, but Riley was there, and the game ends on an 8-5-3 double play. Holy cow.
Holy cow, the legend. Boog, you knew the call would be great. There were several good calls out of last night's game. Brian Anderson's call on TBS. I can't wait to hear, you know, the Braves radio home call from Ben Ingram. We're going to have a chance later in the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I think one of our Bleacher tweeters wrote in about it. They want to hear it. We'll give the people what they want.
Well, an amazing finish and a big comeback win for the Atlanta Braves. We talked about Ali versus Frazier. This was Ali coming off the ropes, but Braves winning game two after being down 4-0. Austin Riley talked after the game about his go-ahead homer in the bottom of the eighth inning.
Only thing I was thinking of is I know there's a short fence down there. Hopefully it gets over it. And luckily it did. And just, you know, like I said, you just try to take those moments in because, you know, postseason's special. It's awesome. Awesome time of year. Awesome baseball. And like I said, do it with these guys. You know, we fight 162 games out of the year plus spring. We're with each other so much. So just trying to enjoy it with them as much as possible.
Austin talked about that game-ending play when he cut off the ball, that the overthrow from the outfield.
I was just screaming one, one, one as loud as I could and just trying to read, see where the ball was going. And like I said, I think it was just one of those things where right place, right time.
Yeah, I texted after the game. I love hearing Austin Riley's voice. You can tell he's all hoarse from all the yelling and all the excitement. I texted after the game with a member of the Braves coaching staff. I'll be talking about that with Tim Kirch and Alex Avila coming up. Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, talked about that final double play.
So much it went through my mind. I mean, I didn't know if he's going to run out of room. Then after he caught it, you know, it's kind of you go hoarse yelling. And great play by Austin. Great play by Michael, number one, but then the wherewithal of Austin, you know, to be continuing to watch the play and then make the big out.
He talked about his hitters at bats against the dominant Zach Wheeler.
Honestly, I don't say anything to them. I mean, they're, you know, they know what they're up against. They've faced him before. They know how good he is. I just have faith in those guys that they're you know what, they give you a hard 27. I mean, even if the first few of them aren't, you know, they're never going to stop fighting in the batter's box. And, you know, they know what a tough matchup that is with that guy because he's, like I say, he's one of the game's best.
So Travis d'Arnaud is sneaky great in the postseason. He's played a lot of postseason games. He's had a lot of success, and he talked about this particular game.
You know, every playoff win's exciting. I think the way it ended was one of the most exciting games, ending to a games I've ever seen as far as a defensive standpoint, where you got Money Mike making a crazy catch on the wall and us doubling up Harper to close it out. It was really emotional, especially the way we came back. So it was one of my favorite postseason games ever.
Michael Harris II, and made that great catch, talked about the play at the end of the game.
I just saw Castellanos put a good swing on it. I knew I was going to have to make a play at the wall. And once I caught it, I didn't know Bryce made it around second. I thought he was halfway, and I just had to get it in before he got there. But I guess everybody was in the right spot, right time, and made the play to end it.
Yeah, when he was first asked about this, he talked about blacking out. Like it was so much excitement, like there was sensory overload for him. Rob Thompson, the Phillies manager, talked about Harper's decision to round second base.
Usually you don't pass the base. You stay in front of it, make sure it's not caught. But he thought the ball was clearly over his head. Didn't think he was going to catch it. And Harris made a heck of a play. I mean, unbelievable. So he tried to get back and he slipped, and you know, but usually you stay in front of second base.
He talked about the defeat in game two.
It's a little disappointing. You know, you get up 4-0 on these guys and you had some opportunities to break it open and you didn't. And they come back and score. We didn't score in the last four innings of the game. So that's a little disappointing, but hey, you know, now we've got home field advantage now. And really that's what you're looking for after these two games.
Taylor, how about the understated Canadian and Rob Thompson's response to that? It's a little disappointing. You know what? We've got two games at home. We have home field advantage. Sarah Abbott's favorite ballpark. That was pretty. I love hearing Rob Thompson and his calm. Yes.
Meh, we'll get back to it next game. You know, no big deal. No big deal. That's my Rob Thompson.
I love it. That's how he is, by the way. That is not like, it's not like he's in his office and he's like having to work on that, like his acting skills. That's how he is all the time. And it feels like his players respond to it. There's a little bit of that from the Phillies players. Bryce Harper talked about getting doubled off first to end the game.
Yeah, I mean, just taking a chance. Michael made a great play and doubled me up. So tough way to end it.
Yeah. Total respect in what he was saying. He talked about taking the series going back to Philly.
You know, you absolutely want to come in and go 2-0, right? But we did our job. You know, we got 1-1, and we're going back home to play 2 in front of our home crowd, and I think we're all looking forward to that.
He was asked specifically about the base running player, what he should or shouldn't have done. Taylor, if you play 838, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he made a good play. You know, I probably shouldn't have gone over second base, but, you know, made a decision, and, you know, I'll live with that.
He was asked more about the ninth inning.
Yeah, I mean, just taking a chance. Michael made a great play and then doubled me up. So, tough way to end it.
Assuming you were not surprised that they did not have the Iglesias start the inning against you using the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, Iglesias is good. I mean, in any spot, you can anything can happen. So, we had an opportunity with me getting on first base right there, and just didn't happen.
Where you were when he caught it, did you know you were, did you think you had a shot to get back, or did you kind of know you were?
Yeah, I mean, he made a good play. You know, I probably shouldn't have gone over second base, but, you know, made a decision, and, you know, I'll live with that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you hear his answers repeated a couple times. That's the way it is in the postseason, because you have all these writers sort of cycling in that haven't heard the answers before. Sarah, I loved Harper after the game. You know, he made a mistake. He owned it, moved on. Total respect for the other team, but he's also feeling good about your chances.
I love the accountability and I love the composure. You know, yes. They're just like, hey, we got this. It's fine. We got this. We're going home. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I'm sure that Zach Wheeler was the same. I haven't heard this sound, but I'm sure he was when he was asked about the frustration of a game 2 loss.
It's frustrating, but like I said, I kind of let them get the momentum going, and, you know, that's my fault. So, you know, I let them right back in the game, and it's tough. But you know what? Now we're going to Philly, and we're going to play at our place.
So that series is 1-1 as it moves to Philadelphia. The Diamondbacks and Dodgers played game 2, and Christian Walker gave the Diamondbacks a lead in the top of the first.
The pitch. Swinging a ball, hit out towards center, going back is Outman, twisting and turning, and he makes a leaping catch. It crushes into the wall in center field. The runners tag Marte to third. Coming in to score is Carroll.
That was Roxy Bernstein on ESPN Radio. The Diamondbacks extended the lead.
Miller, the 2-1. Swinging a liner to center and a base hit for Gurriel. Pham being waved around third. He'll score as Outman throws it back into the infield. An RBI single with 2 outs for Gurriel and a 3-run first for the Diamondbacks. And that will draw a mound visit from the pitching coach, Mark Pryor.
Yeah, Mark Pryor going out talking to the starting pitcher again. We talked going into the postseason how the Dodgers had to overcome their lack of starting pitching. Well, we're 2 games into the postseason, and they're 2 starters. Clayton Kershaw in game 1, Bobby Miller in game 2, 9 runs allowed in 2 innings. It was 3-0 Arizona, bottom of the 4th inning, and this happened.
Gallen, the 3-2 to Martinez. Swing and a fly ball to right. Going back is Carroll. He's onto the track, at the wall, leaps. It's gone, a home run. Towering fly ball to right that just squeaked out of here. And the Dodgers are on the board.
So the Dodgers constantly had runners on base, but the Diamondbacks constantly pitch out of it. Here's Zach Gallen against Freddie Freeman at the end of the 5th.
Gallen, 3-2 to Freeman. And it's strike 3 called, another curve, and a big pump of the fist and a scream from Gallen leaving the mound of the first base dugout. The Dodgers strand 2. The big strikeout of Freeman to end the bottom of the 5th.
The Diamondbacks extended their lead in the top of the 6th.
The 1-2. Swing and a ball hit in the air to left. Going back is Peralta. Onto the track. It is gone. A home run. Straight away left for Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Into the second row of the bleachers. His first home run of the postseason. And the Diamondbacks leading 4-1.
An underrated hero in this game for the Diamondbacks, Ryan Thompson, came out of the bullpen to get Freddie Freeman at the end of the 7th.
Walker holding Betts. Good size lead for Mookie at first. The pitch. Swing and reaching for it. A ground at a second. Fielded by Marte. To Perdomo. The turn. 2. Double play. Nicely turned by the Diamondbacks.
This is what it sounded like at the end of the game.
Sewald, the 1-0. And Wong swings in the air to center, hit right toward Alec Thomas, who makes a casual one-handed catch. Ball game over, and the Diamondbacks have come to Dodger Stadium, and they've won each of the first two in this division series. They win game two by a final of 4-2, and Arizona now going home up 2-0 on the 100-win L.A. Dodgers.
So we were on Baseball Tonight when Dave Roberts came on, and his post-game press conference came on, and I was surprised at how blunt he was in talking about his players. Give it a listen.
You know, I didn't love the pitch selection. You know, there were some balls out of the zone, and there were some borderline balls or pitches that, you know, we offered at that, you know, we didn't give ourselves a chance to get into counts. And so, you know, I saw, you know, some expansion, some pitches that were pitcher's pitches that we offered at. Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, that's just what I saw. And we had opportunities, but, you know, when you get opportunities, you gotta cash in.
Yeah, for manager speak and coach speak, Taylor, that was unusual to hear someone be like, yep, we had terrible at-bats in so many words.
Yeah, he's another guy that's pretty even-keeled and really not into, acting out is a bad way to put it, but lashing out at his players, not a typical Dave Roberts.
That's exactly right. All right. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live. Hot Tickets today, those in Minnesota and Texas, because the Astros play the Twins at 4:07 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Radio. Orioles at Rangers, that's 8:03 Eastern time on ESPN Radio. Today, we've got Chris and Javier of the Astros against Sonny Gray. And here's what Sonny Gray had to say.
They were incredible last time we were at home. We expect nothing less. They're going to be incredible again. Having said that, coming into the game 1-1, coming back to Minnesota, it's a big opportunity for us to go out there and play a hard-fought competitive game. I'm excited for this.
The Orioles have faced the Rangers, and Brandon Hyde talked about the mountain his team needs to climb.
Definitely must win for us tomorrow. Our definitely backs are against the wall, and we haven't played our best baseball the first two games, and hopefully we can play well tomorrow. But everybody will be all hands will be on deck tomorrow, and you know, hopefully Dean can give us some innings, get a nice start for us.
Dean Kramer starts for the Orioles against Nathan Eovaldi. Kramer started for Team Israel in the WBC. He's got family in Israel who he says are safe. He talked about that in speaking with reporters on Monday.
Almost every single person in the clubhouse has come in and checked on me at some point over the last 48 hours, and I'm very grateful for that. Is there a hesitation? No, I still want to pitch, but, I mean, it's going to be in the back of my head.
A couple other notes before we go. The Red Sox have fired pitching coach Dave Busch, third base coach Carlos Fables. A lot of teams now are making these decisions about their coaching staff going forward. The Nationals, according to reports, will not bring back four coaches, bench coach Tim Bogaert, third base coach Gary DeSarcina, first base coach EY Jr., Eric Young Jr., and assistant hitting coach Pat Ressler. Pitching coach Jim Hickey will return. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, a new episode of the College Game Day podcast. In the vein of Boog's philosophy. Your conversation yesterday about pitching scripts versus feel for the game. They had a good conversation on that show about when firing a coordinator makes sense and like is it really going to impact your team? Do you have a defensive play caller on your staff that can actually fill the job, you know, in regards to USC and Alex Grinch? So I thought it was a nice conversation, something that I think you would have enjoyed had you been on that show, Buster. So check it out.
Well, College, you know what? Podcast. Maybe we can make that happen at some point, and I can share all my Vanderbilt football lore with them.
Oh, I would love a crossover episode in the offseason. That would be great.
Yeah, I'm sure that they want to hear all my Whit Taylor stories. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkchen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkchen covers baseball for ESPN, Tim, and I'm not even going to beat around the bush about this one. How much fun was that Braves-Phillies game last night?
That was tremendous. The Braves had won like one of their last 50 games where they were four runs down in the sixth inning, and they came back to win that game. The Austin Riley homer, I'm still not sure. I mean, how strong is that guy? The ball was away from him. It was down. It was part one-handed. He hit a home run, and not many postseason games have ever finished quite like that one did, with a sensational double play like that. It was an amazing game, and this is why October baseball is the best. As we see stuff like this, we just slap our foreheads and say, how in the world could that have happened?
So in a few minutes, we're going to be talking with our friend Sarah Lang. She texted me after the game last night that in the sixth inning, when the Phillies led 4-0 and Zach Wheeler was dealing, he wasn't allowing any hits, the win probability for the Phillies was 94%. And Tim, it felt like it was 99.9%. To me, right. Like, I didn't think there's any way the Phillies would lose that game.
Right. So maybe this tells us more than a lot more about the Braves, even though we all thought we knew about the Braves. The Phillies are that one team that's so dangerous, and, you know, they've got the Braves number. I know I'm not buying any of that. I love the Phillies. I love the way they play. But maybe the Braves have a little bit more grit than people think. Maybe they're more than just a team that hit 307 homers. Maybe the Braves are even better than we thought, and last night was a perfect example of that.
So let's run through some of the particulars in this game. I got to say, as I was watching this plate appearance, I'm going to ask Alex Avila about this coming up. Why in the world would the Phillies throw him a slider right there? They've been beating him consistently with fastballs.
Well, that was a bit surprising, but again, Buster, this is postseason, and this is the only sport where you can break down one pitch. You know, there's no time in an NBA game to say, you know, why was Jordan on Magic there in for that 30 seconds in the third quarter? There's too many plays going on to really understand that. But in baseball, you have time. Out of a game in which there are 250 pitches thrown, you can take one and say, what happened here? It happens all the time in baseball. The slow pace of the game allows us to break it down immediately, and then the next day and for years and years later.
All right, we're only going to break down this part of the play that ended the game. Michael Harris's catch. I was thinking last night as I watched that, he is as comfortable as any outfielder I've seen going back toward the warning track to the fence, any outfielder I've seen since Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, there is just an ease with him about understanding where he is on the field in a way that you don't see with a lot of outfielders. That was part of the reason why that catch was so phenomenal. What'd you think?
As soon as that ball went up, just watch it one more time. He had that thing tracked immediately. He knew exactly where it was going to end up. He knew exactly where he had to be and what was going to happen. He knew he was going to hit the fence at that angle. That was a great defensive play by a great young center fielder. Nobody went back on a ball better than Andrew Jones did in his days with the Braves. But Michael Harris made that play and won the game with it. But I repeat, he knew exactly. He's seen that enough times that he knows, I'm going to catch this ball the minute it went up.
Bryce Harper owned what he said was a mistake on base running on that play. He said he should have stopped at second base. You've talked about base running in the majors for a long time. What did you think of that?
Well, I've seen way worse than that. But yes, you're taught you have to be able to get back to first base on that play. You cannot be doubled up on that play to end a playoff game. And you have to recognize that Michael Harris is in center field. He might catch this ball. So you can't go past second base and risk getting doubled up there. I've seen so many base running mistakes way more egregious than that. That was typical Bryce Harper playing at 1,000 miles an hour, which is great. That's him playing with anger, which is great. But on that play, you stop short a second, and then you figure it out. Because you might score anyway if the ball drops instead, and you're going to be at third with less than two outs, instead the game's over.
So when Austin Riley came rushing in to pick up that overthrow from Michael Harris from the outfield that went past Orlando Arcia, went past Ozzie Albies, immediately thought back to all those moments that I've seen before games. You've seen it, where the Braves infielders are drilling and Ron Washington is talking to them and talking to them and talking to them. Austin Riley comes in, picks up the ball, makes a great off-balance throw to first base, doubles off Bryce Harper. I texted Wash after the game and asked him about it, and he said, fundamental. You find him, you react to the play, you get in a position to back up, and then, in his text message, he had about 15 exclamation points, Tim. He was so fired up right after the game about Riley's play. What'd you think?
He should have been, because it helped win the game. But Buck Showalter always taught me to watch away from the ball. Watch the defensive players. What are they doing when they're not involved in the play? They should all be doing something. They shouldn't just be standing there. You should be backing up somewhere, something to help the play, even though you're not involved in it. And that's what Austin Riley did. I almost started to cry when I saw him back up like that, because that's the way you're supposed to play the game. And I'm sorry, Buster, we're not very good at that part of the game. How many times have we seen an inside the park home run where there's nobody backing up the left fielder, center fielder, right fielder? Nobody else is moving to the ball except for the guy who made the play. Well, in this case, Austin Riley moved to the ball. And it ended up ending the game on one of the best double plays you'll ever see.
And tell us about Austin Riley, the person. He's one of my favorite guys to talk to. He doesn't talk a lot, but man, there's such substance to him.
Yeah. And again, this is a guy who struggled early. Then Chipper Jones got a hold of him and told him, look, you got a chance to be great. He's so funny talking about anything. As you know, Buster, he loves to talk about punting. So I always ask people, could you dunk a basketball? I'm fascinated by how good a punter he was at high school, college, and all that. And his dad was a punter. So you can get him going on a variety of subjects, and he's delightful on all of them, but mostly on baseball, because despite all of his talent and all of his strength, he has a really good understanding of what he's doing out there.
So after the Dodgers lost to the Diamondbacks last night, Dave Roberts was surprisingly blunt in basically criticizing his hitters, saying they expanded the strike zone, didn't like their bats, they'd missed opportunities. That's the Dodgers side of the story. On the Diamondbacks side of the story, Tim, they're not afraid of the Dodgers. I think that's pretty clear.
Right. And again, this is the trend in baseball now, Buster. You bring up a bunch of young guys who are fast and athletic and are fearless because they're too young to even understand. And they just say, go take it to them. And that's what the Diamondbacks have done. For the most part, that's what the Orioles did this year. That's what the Reds did after they brought up all those young kids. And I love it. I think it's a trend in the game that is going to continue. You can't be afraid of the Dodgers if you haven't played the Dodgers enough, if they haven't beaten you enough, especially at this time of year. And I think the Diamondbacks have a huge chip on their shoulder. People looking at them saying, what are they even doing in the playoffs? First off, that's totally unfair. They totally belong in the playoffs. And they are taking it to the Dodgers with young, hungry, athletic kids. I love it.
And boy, we've seen this story play out in baseball so often. 2011 Cardinals on the fringe of being eliminated. They come back and win the World Series. The Atlanta Braves in 2021. It was just a few weeks ago that the Diamondbacks had this brutal road trip that finishes it up in Citi Field. And you get Torrey Lavella pulling his players out of the game because they got blown out. And I think they played, that was like the 14th game out of playing 17 games in 17 days. And he calls his friend Dustin Pedroia, He was coach when both were with the Red Sox and Torrey was the bench coach, and basically says, come and speak to our players. And Dustin Pedroia is yelling at them, saying, let's go. Come on. Don't tell me you're tired. Don't tell me that we've got the playoffs here. Tim, they've been a different team since Pedroia talked to them.
Yeah, and even before that, Torrey Lovello went after his guys also once, and this is not like him, but you remember that time, Buster, when he said, we took some non-competitive at-bats, or we've lost our focus, or we've lost our passion. He was not happy with the way that his team was playing, and they got the message, because they've been a really good team since, and Pedroia's speech, I can just see him screaming at those guys. Hilarious. But again, do not underestimate the Diamondbacks. They have a good idea where they are and what they're doing.
All right, the series that you're doing, the Baltimore Orioles against the Texas Rangers, I don't mean to be Captain Obvious, but you feel like the Orioles need to score first in game three today, yes?
Yeah, they are the best come-from-behind team in baseball, but they have to get something going to get the Rangers thinking, well, we might lose this game. Because the Rangers won four games in a row, all on the road in the postseason. Only two other teams have ever done that. And yes, when you walk 11 guys in a game like the Orioles did, when your starting pitcher, your two best pitchers, one doesn't get through the fifth, the other doesn't get through the second, you got to start early and you got to punch the Rangers in the face. Because I'm telling you, Buster, I've seen a lot of the Rangers here, and I am really impressed with the culture in the clubhouse. I'm really impressed with the at-bats they take. Their defense is elite. It's way underrated. And when you can throw a couple of veteran pitchers out there, Eovaldi, Montgomery, it's a different-looking team. And I'm very impressed with what I've seen with the Rangers. They are a wildly erratic team. They can be the worst team in the game. But then for a month, they're the best team in the game. That's who the Orioles are up against, and they just have to hope now that they haven't caught the Rangers in one of their really good stretches.
Yeah, and we saw last night Max Fried taking the mound for the first time in 18 days. He was rusty. He was all over the place. He wasn't right. Nathan Eovaldi, when he first came off the injured list on September 5th, he was like that too. Like, he struggled at the outset, and now that we're a month into his return from the injured list, Tim, he's a different pitcher. On the podcast this week, we've talked about Carlos Correa. The comparison I made is, I said he is his generation's Derek Jeter in terms of his comfort level playing in the postseason. Tell me about that.
Well, first off, with Eovaldi, 20 and a third innings, 9.30 ERA, 13 walks, 7 homers allowed in 20 innings when he came off the injured list on September the 5th. And yet, before that start in Tampa, and I covered that game, Brad Miller of the Rangers, who's a really smart guy, told me, he said, of any pitcher on this team, the Rangers, I would want Nate Eovaldi in this game because he has changed the culture in our clubhouse. He is a big game pitcher. He loves the postseason. He is fearless. And he went out there and threw a 6-inning gem. And by the way, Buster, Josh Smith told me that Rangers infielder, he told me when they left spring training, all the rookies that made the team for the first time, like made a major league team for the first time, Nate Eovaldi bought every one of them a watch, a really nice, expensive watch, in order to show them, congratulations, you made it to the big leagues and you're with us now. That's the changing of the culture that we've seen with the Rangers. And it has a lot to do with Bruce Bochy, but it has more to do with Chris Young, former major league pitcher, brilliant guy who recognized and told me, look, we brought people in who not just could play, but were right for the clubhouse.
Correa, I feel like his confidence absolutely rubs off on other players. I was thinking about that yesterday, watching Sonny Gray's confidence in that press conference. Something I've known Sonny Gray since he was an undergrad at Vanderbilt. We saw what happened in New York. The market was too big for him. He wound up being traded to Minnesota. And Tim, he's got a swagger today. And I think a lot of the Twins do. And I do think that Correa has something to do with that. The way that, he from the first day that he arrived in spring training this year, after he had that crazy winter, deal with the Giants blows up, deal with the Mets blows up, comes to the Twins. And he said to me in the first day of spring, you know what? I'm going to do what I can do to make this team a championship team. And I think he believed that.
Oh, he did, and he's a different player at this time of year. There's no disputing what he has done in the postseason. It's corny, it's cliche, but when the lights get the brightest, that's when he's at his best. He did not have a good offensive season this year, but he did have a great defensive season, and now that the biggest games are here, he's already made one of the best defensive plays you'll see in the postseason, and he got three hits and three RBIs against his former team to help them win game two.
Yeah, and you're not even talking about the pickoff play with Vladdy, right? I mean, he put that pickoff play on. I mean, he's already given us some choices.
Well, I'm sorry. I just can't get into bad base running now because it'll just make me angry. Because it's the only thing I can't put up with. I can put up with anything else. If you can't hit, if you can't throw a strike, if you can't catch a ground ball, but you can't make a base running mistake. It's so interesting that Corey Seager was saying that the two most important things this time of year in the postseason are situational hitting and base running. And if you do both of those really well, you got a chance to do something in October. But you run yourself out of an inning, you make a mistake on the bases, as the Orioles did in game one of the series, that's a real problem.
All right, Tim. Well, it was fun the other day when I was driving from the airport down here to Bristol, listening to you and Carl on the radio. And I'm sure I'll be hearing you again today.
Right. It'll be great. And I got the next round ALCS. I just can't wait to see who's going to be in it. And these series are far from over, Buster. I know we got some 2-0s going, but I refuse to believe in this unpredictable baseball season that things are going to go quietly from here.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Alex Avila played 13 seasons in the big leagues. You see him on MLB Network, but he was recently asked the question by his kids. One of his kids asked him, "Daddy, are you famous?" Okay. And Alex, I've known you a long time, and I predicted that you would downplay it, but come on, right? Well, tell me about your answer.
I told her that I wasn't. I mean, like you said, you've known me a long time. I deflect. I always deflect the attention. You know me.
And so if they said former battery mate Justin Verlander is Justin famous, what would you say?
Now what I would say, yes. But no, my daughters, you know, they're old enough. They saw me play, and actually they see me on TV, you know, on MLB Network here and there. So like their friends are starting to like kind of catch on. So it's like, you know, like they'll come back from school or a friend's house, like, "Oh, my friend so-and-so Googled you, and, you know, all this information came up." I'm like, well, you know, if it says I punched out four times you know, on a certain game, then that's pretty much it.
Well, you know, the sad part of your resume is that you're connected with the University of Alabama, and me as a Vanderbilt guy, you know, I don't appreciate that. It's funny, this whole conversation about being famous or not famous. You're going to be part of a segment that we did with Xavier Scruggs last week, which is called "You Played and I Didn't." Okay, the highest I went playing baseball was in high school. So I'm going to present different topics for you under the guise of "you played and I didn't," and I need your perspective, okay?
Okay.
All right. Postseason pressure. You played and I didn't. Tell me how real that is and how that manifests.
I think it's very real. And I think as it builds up over the course of the season, when you're in a position to play in the postseason, going into it, like you are – as a player, and I mean, I'll even go as far as to like talking about it from a catching perspective with the amount of decisions you have to make behind the plate. You are going into it, you know, trying to make sure you are, I mean, as prepared, if not over prepared, with everything that you have to try to decide upon over the course of the game to not, you know, end up getting caught off guard in any sort of situation in the game. So the pressure is definitely real. And there is something to be said about guys being able to slow it down over the course of the game to kind of manage that, to be able to make the right decisions over the course of the game.
You know, what's interesting about that is that even a veteran team like the Dodgers last night, and I don't know if you saw Dave Roberts speaking with reporters mm-hmm. after the game, he was pretty direct and blunt about his team's plate appearances. Like, he felt like they expanded the strike zone, maybe guys trying to do too much in the postseason. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. And I think you've seen that in these first two games with LA, where, I mean, they're a team historically been able to be able to slow the game down. They work at bats. They you know, typically get the starting pitcher's pitch count up. They work their walks. They have great discipline usually. And they showed that throughout the regular season and historically as a team over the last several years to be able to do that. And, you know, I think part of it too has, you know, some of the big guys like Freddie and Mookie have been missing kind of those pitches that typically, you know, hammer, whether it's just like they just miss it, it's a pop up or something like that. So you don't, you know, you haven't been seeing that kind of production. So, you know, when they chase and the rest of the lineup goes out of the zone or, you know, they don't get those hits that they usually get, it's kind of magnified. But I would agree with that for sure, because, you know, when you're having trouble scoring runs, that's typically the reason or that you, something you can look to that, hey, we're missing the pitches that we should be hitting. And because of that, we're trying to do too much and hit pitches we know we can't really handle or do damage with.
Alex, I've always felt like these in-division playoff matchups are a little bit different in terms of what's underneath them. You know, in particular in this series, Diamondbacks versus Dodgers reminds me of those days when like the Rays would have a playoff matchup against the Yankees or the Red Sox, a team that they would see a lot. I feel like the awe goes away, but you played and I didn't. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. No, it does. And I've played in that rivalry, not so much in the playoffs, but, you know, Diamondbacks, Dodgers, and there is a bit of a rivalry there, you know, mainly for the fact that as an Arizona player, a lot of times when the Dodgers come into town to Phoenix, I mean, it's largely, you know, LA Dodger fans there. So the players, they notice that. You notice that as an Arizona Diamondback player. So there is a rivalry there because of it. And my first year playing for the Diamondbacks, we actually led the division for the first 5 months of the season, and the Dodgers ended up, you know, coming in and you know, ended up being in first place that year, and we ended up missing the playoffs. But that rivalry is real. And throughout the year, going into the postseason, you're right. That kind of aura, or just the typical, like, just unknown that you would get in the playoffs facing a team that you don't face as often kind of goes away when you're facing that in-division rival in the playoffs. And you know, like, that's the thing, the Diamondbacks are used to, even though they hadn't had that much success in Chavez Ravine, you know, they're used to going in there, you know, several times a year to play the Dodgers. So, you know, that's something that's not really a factor to them, where it could have been for a different team.
The way that the Phillies pitched Austin Riley last night, they attacked him with fastballs in his first plate appearances. And I don't know if it's, you know, mechanical issue with Austin. I don't know if it's just late in the season, but his bat seemed a little bit slower. Zach Wheeler's blowing the ball past them early in that, you know, that plate appearance that resulted in a home run. Jeff Hoffman's blowing the ball past him, and they throw him a slider. But you played, and I didn't. does that question make sense to you? Because I was really surprised they threw him a slider.
You know, well, you may have not played, but as long as you've covered the game, I'm glad you asked that. You're asking that question, because I thought about it watching that game and seeing the home run that Riley hit off Hoffman. And again, a lot of times when I'm watching these games, like, a lot of people see the home run, but then I'll think about, like, if I'm like JT behind the plate calling the pitches. And you're right, you know, throughout the game, even throughout the series, you know, Riley's been getting beat by the fastball, especially anything kind of 95 plus. And for what it's worth, like, who knows, but you know, he's a good fastball hitter. And, you know, so, like, when I'm behind the plate, and I was kind of putting myself in JT's shoes there, where, you know, Hoffman's throwing 98 miles an hour and Riley was having a hard time catching up to it, you know, was able to, that strike two fastball up in the zone, swung right through, definitely late on the fastball. But Hoffman has a good slider as well that can get the swing and miss. So you have two plus pitches. So as a catcher, when you're kind of going through the sequence, and you know you're facing a one of the best hitters in the game, one of the better power hitters in the game, that it's that constant battle of, like, when is he going to make the adjustment? Is he going to cheat on this fastball? Do I call another fastball here? Or do I go to the slider knowing that he's the type of hitter that's able to make an adjustment from pitch to pitch? And that's that battle that you have as a catcher when you're calling a game, going back and forth. And sometimes, you know, it's, you make the wrong call. And I don't even think it was really the wrong call. He actually got him off balance and was way out in front. He was almost kind of in between. But it was just enough on the plate to where he was able to, you know, just kind of stay through the zone long enough. If that ball is maybe, you know, 2 inches, you know, to the outside corner of the plate, it's either a swing and miss or a ground ball out. And, you know, it's easy to go back and look at it, but I know, like, once that home run happened, like, I just kind of put myself back in behind the plate in JT's shoes, where I've been there, where it's like you're kind of going back and forth with how to get this guy out, knowing that he's a great hitter and he can make adjustments pitch to pitch.
Yeah, during the year, Riley hit 205 against sliders. And even if he had thrown a backup slider, he probably just yanks it foul, right? If he had missed 2 inches on that side of the plate too, so maybe that was. Michael Harris's catch in the ninth inning, just talking about specifically about the catch, what has struck me about him playing center field is he has so much comfort on the warning track and against the fence. I've seen a lot of outfielders, once they get close to the fence, they get a little bit shy. He reminds me of Ken Griffey Jr. in his level of comfort making plays around the fence. But you played and I didn't. You know, what do you think?
No, I agree with you. I mean, Ken, you know, Jr.'s that's a high comparison, but, like, I mean, that's, you're right. His comfort going back on the ball to, you know, onto the warning track and just knowing, having his awareness of where the fence is and how many steps he has from the beginning of the warning track to the fence, you could tell, like, he practices that. And obviously in his home park, he has incredible awareness of where that fence is at all times. Because it looks like, it definitely does, that he has the ability to be able to go back on balls and play them as about as well as anybody up against the fence. Time his jumps correctly. Because we've seen he's made several plays, you know, over the course of his young career going back on balls like that, and covering ground. And then, but it never looks like, I mean, I understand your comparison to Griffey, because it doesn't look like he's putting much effort into it. It's almost like he knows exactly where he needs to be in order to make the catch and not crash into the wall where, you know, the ball pops out of his glove. Like, it's always, like, kind of perfectly done. And it was, I mean, definitely probably one of the best plays of our show. We haven't seen that play that ever. So that was a pretty impressive catch by Harris.
Yeah, there's a comfort level He's in control. He never, and it doesn't seem like there's any fear, but not because he's not aware of the possibility of crashing into the fence, but because he's so under control. Like there's no fear in what he's doing in the way that he moves. All right, Austin Riley, you know, last night on Baseball Tonight, they showed the Michael Harris catch as a web gem. And I said, no, there need to be two web gems on this play because Austin Riley backing up that play. Tell me about that.
Yes. I mean, you could tell, like, you know, from the different camera angles, once Harris catches that ball, you could see Riley trying to, you know, make sure he's, you know, either Arcia or Albies hears him, you know, to throw the ball back to first, to go back to first. And as he's doing that, he's kind of working his way towards second base, towards the play. And, you know, credit to him to have the awareness, at least to, you know, be going towards where the play is. And, you know, the ball ended up getting past both, you know, Albies and Arcia, you know, and him being able to be there. It's like right play or, you know, right place, right time. You know, I don't want to say like, well, he was completely thinking I got to back this play up. I think he was trying to make sure he, you know, those guys heard him to get the ball to first. And his just kind of, you know, baseball savvy, baseball, you know, IQ was taking him towards the play. You know, which that, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. That's, you know, that's why when people talk about, you know, baseball IQ, baseball savvy, that's what that is. It's, you know, making sure you're aware of your surroundings and where you need to be at all times, even if the ball is not hit to you. And that's what he did. And he made an incredibly strong throw on the run on the backhand, almost like if he was playing a slow roller charging in. And because it was only going to take a perfect strong throw in order to get Bryce there, even though Bryce was, you know, a little farther than he wanted to be.
This was a guy who was a dominant pitcher in high school. I texted Ron Washington, the third base coach, after the game. As you know, he works with their infielders. And I said, give me your view on that play. And he just texted back, fundamentals, backing up plays. He was so excited. Yeah. I think he included 18 exclamation points in his text message back with that one. It was fun.
Tends to go unnoticed sometimes, and even like when you're watching the game back, highlights, things like that, like it's never a highlight, you know, until you make it a highlight. And it's a lot of things that just, you know, they go unnoticed, or, you know, guys don't typically work on all the time because it's boring and you know, not as flashy as your great plays, but it's important when it comes to winning a game.
All right, I got two more quick ones for you. Your old battery mate, Justin Verlander, the Astros continue to move forward. He continues to move forward in his career. He's got 257 regular season wins. And I've been saying on the podcast and trying to explain to people how badly he wants 300. And, you know, you get people who say, well, he's 40 years old. There's no way he's going to do that. And I've had this conversation with Justin. He is really focused on 300. And to me, anybody who's downplaying that is out of their minds. Like his drive with that. You played, I didn't. You caught Verlander, I didn't. What do you think about 300 wins for Justin?
So I've had this conversation with other people too, and I've had several people like, there's no way. You know, because that is a decent amount of wins for a guy that you know, just turned 40 to have to, you know, accrue, you know, over the course of the next few years. But, I mean, I do not put it past Justin at all. I know that's a goal of his. But I also know that he wants to pitch till he's 45. So, you know, who's not to say that he can't win enough, you know, the amount of games he needs to win to get to 300. And, you know, with just knowing him, knowing his work ethic, I put the chances at better, you know, than most people think, because, just knowing him as well as I do, that's I think it's more of a possibility than a lot of people think.
All right, and last one, the Dodgers are not only planning to extend their season in Game 3, but also planning to get the ball in the hands of Clayton Kershaw at least one more time. We don't know what Kershaw is going to do in 2024. It's possible that game he started the other night was the last start of his career, which for me would be really kind of, you know, sad. It wouldn't take away from what he's accomplished. Because he has such preeminence within the sport. I talked to one of your peers yesterday. He told me he gets text messages all the time from current players about Kershaw. Tell me about the respect for Kershaw within the game.
Well, I he's one of the most respected players, and not just like currently in baseball, but I think, you know, when you look at it historically, you know, he is one of the best pitchers ever to pitch. So like you said, I think his, you know, the his game one start, even though it leaves a bad taste, and hopefully he gets another crack at it in game four, it does not whatsoever, I think, kind of diminish anything, because he is, you know, when you look at his body of work, one of the greatest pitchers to ever pitch in the history of the game. And he is, you know, one of the most well-respected players and people, you know, human beings in our sport. So I hope it's not. I hope he gets another crack at it in game four, because I think he'll pitch much better. And, you know, so time will tell. But he is definitely a treasure of our sport that, you know, should be celebrated.
Yeah. All right, Alex. Thanks for doing this. And, yes, tell your daughters you are a big deal.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Buster. I appreciate it.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com, and a huge baseball fan, as has been established in the podcast over and over and over again. When Austin Riley hits that home run last night to give the Braves a lead, paint the picture for your reaction at your place.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, obviously not rooting for any team in particular, but it was such an exciting moment. I think I screamed or something, like, and oh, my gosh, like, it was one of those, because it wasn't just that go-ahead home run with two outs and wall trailing and all that. But it was so majestic. There's certain types of home runs to left field, specifically in that ballpark, that feel like they will never land. Even if they're not 500-foot home runs or even 450, there's something about home runs to left field, specifically in Atlanta there, that look just out of this world. And it was one of those. So, you know, so happy for Austin Riley, the person, the player, the team. And, you know, I mean, it's good for baseball, for a team that led the majors in runs per game, had 104 wins, all this to show that they're not going quietly. I know there's been a lot of discussion, narratives about, oh, the best teams are losing, so on and so forth. And so it was a really good moment for all of that as well.
Yeah, it was like, I've been comparing this to Ollie Frazier. This was like the Braves coming off the ropes, right? And finishing around with a flurry, and all of a sudden we got ourselves a fight now. 1-1 going to Philadelphia. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three is two.
So let's talk about how that game ended. Two outs, a double play, the first 8-5-3 double play in postseason history. Michael Harris, the second two. Who else? Austin Riley picking that ball up to first base to Matt Olson. It was also the first double play involving an outfielder to end a postseason game ever. So an outfield assist double play. We see them all the time. They happen. They happened in the playoffs. We had never seen one to end the postseason game. And, I mean, just incredible for Austin Riley, of all players, after hitting that home run, to be the one with the awareness to see what was happening with that play, pick up that ball in the infield. Because the moment that Michael Harris made that catch, I think I screamed sling then, too. And then the ball looked like it was going to roll around the infield, and I was really stressed out. And then there was Austin Riley picking it up and throwing it first. So just an unreal sequence. And Brian Anderson's call with it's over at the end was so, so perfect. Just capturing all of the emotion. I heard Boog's call also outstanding, but I was listening live on TV.
Number two is three.
So the other incredible part is, you know, this game had
I'm sitting here trying to research a 5-3 double plays and a postseason game with an outfielder, all of that. Meanwhile, it's already 3-0 in LA. So the Diamondbacks have now scored at least 3 runs in the first inning of each of the first 2 games of the NLDS. They're the 3rd team all time to score at least 3 runs in the first inning each of the first 2 games of a postseason series. The A's in the ALDS in 2002, and the Cardinals did in the NLDS in 2000. Again, that's any series. Only one team has had 3 games at any point in one postseason series where they score at least 3 runs in the first inning. It was the 93 Blue Jays in the World Series. So if the Diamondbacks score 3, whether it's the next game or whether we get a game 4, what have you, that would be tying the Blue Jays there.
Number one
is 0. For how many times Taylor's Orioles were swept during the regular season? We talked about this stat a lot. They have not been swept in the series in the regular season, dating back to not actually Adley Rutschman being called up in the series before that. In the series right before he was called up, they played the Rays. They were not swept in that one. And since then, they've been on a real streak. It's the 3rd longest in baseball history. And now here they are on Tuesday, October 10th, on the verge of potentially being swept in the postseason. So again, won't snap the streak that they have in the regular season, but we need some context here. So the Orioles are the 17th team to reach the playoffs, having not been swept in that regular season, excluding 2020. Of the prior 16, only one of those teams had a postseason series they were swept out of. It was Bruce Bochy's 1998 Padres. So now Bruce Bochy's Rangers have a chance to return the favor and be the 2nd team to make this happen, make the Orioles the 2nd team to do them. I found this late at night, not last night, but the night before, after the Orioles had lost that 2nd game. And I was just absolutely losing it that we have 16 teams prior to do this. And the one that was swept in the postseason was, of course, Bochy's team. And then here he is on the other side of it now. We'll see what happens. But I just thought that was a really cool way to contextualize it.
100%. And it'll be interesting to see, how that winds up later today. You're going to be joining the podcast on Wednesday. So I'm wondering if you could give us his number. I just talked to Alex Avila about Justin Verlander and his chances for 300 wins. You know, Alex is going to have some special perspective on that. So is there a way for you to give us a number on that in tomorrow's podcast? Like statistical odds for Verlander to get to 300, because whatever number you generate, Alex will tell you there's a better chance than what that number says.
I was going to say I'll take a look, but I don't think we can put the intangibles of Justin Verlander being Justin Verlander into a number, but I'll try.
Okay. All right, Sarah, good to see you, and have fun today.
Awesome. You too. Thanks for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. RL Foxy T-Rex writes in, all the Dodgers D-backs talk seems to be about how the Dodgers lost rather than how the D-backs won. Any thoughts? Can we get some respect in the desert?
Yeah, look, I hear you. We talked about the Diamondbacks with Alex, with Tim, about how when they play the Dodgers, they're not looking up at the Dodgers as like a big brother. There is a lot of confidence there. Great job by Zach Gallen last night. Great job by their bullpen. But here's the reality. The Dodgers are a 100-win team, and they have a future Hall of Famer whose career might be coming to an end. Those are not minor storylines.
Matt Clicker of Bobbleheads, Kayaking Smith writes, and if we don't hear this full audio clip on the podcast in the morning, I'm going to be upset. He sent along Ben Ingram's call of Riley's home run and the game-ending double play. We can listen to it now.
3-2 pitch. And he hits a high fly ball, deep left field, back to the wall, and it's gone! Austin Riley hitting him where it hurts, and the Braves take the lead in the eighth. Harris back to the warning track. He leaps. Michael's got it! He's got it! They fired it in, and it rolls across the infield, taken by Riley. He throws to the back! They double him off! Ball game over! Braves win! I've never seen a play like that!
Oh! Matt, thanks for sending that in. That was awesome.
Oh, that was good.
Much appreciated.
Yeah. Noah writes in, that was compelling theater last night with the Phillies and Braves. It went from a possible blowout to a compelling series in a matter of innings. That's the postseason drama you wish for. The heavyweight title fight, Buster. You've been crowing about it.
Yes. And you know what? And that was last night. The Braves doing a little rope-a-dope, coming off the ropes when we thought they were dead.
Yeah. P.K. Steinberg writes in, I was a runner-up armchair manager in the year 2018, but I was thinking it was a mistake to keep Wheeler in for the seventh.
PK, I thought that Rob Thompson went one batter too long with Wheeler. You know, he was so good, and I understand Rob, you know, his confidence in him, but the Olsen plate appearance, I was like, oh boy, I that didn't seem like a good spot to keep him in the game.
Last one for today, Sarah Gillespie at Atypical Faith writes in, Dear Bleacher Tweets, is any team with time off doing well right now? The postseason setup doesn't work well for the top teams. Big point of discussion, Buster.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, for me, it's really easy. Just give the number one seeds, the number one and number two seeds, the choice. Do you want to have the bye, or do you want to keep playing through the first week? And that way, and you know and I know, Taylor, 100% of them would choose the bye because they would want to bypass the injury risk. They'd want to rest their relievers. But at least then we could talk about, we could, you know, end the complaining about it. Like, yeah. Give the teams a choice. You want to play all the way through the first week? Let's do it. You know, go ahead. Mm-hmm. But they will all bypass that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, that's it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter while you're watching the games tonight. Go A's, Hon.
Yeah, and by the way, that complaining I referenced, that's coming from my son, the Braves fan. Like, all yesterday, the text, and then I'm like, dude,
enough.
Like, all of them. Every team that gets a bye would choose the bye over playing straight through.
For sure.
So please, let's just make it official. Let them officially choose it so we don't have to complaining every year. That's it for today. My thanks to Alex Abila, to Sarah, to Tim, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and remember – hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.